I'm Rochelle, and I'm going to speak a little about spiritual friendship. Don't know, a lot of you, some of you were here last week, most of you weren't, but Vera Dhamma talked about, about the importance of being an individual, not a conformist to a group and not a rebel who, you know, I used to think rebellion was, you know, really being an individual, but actually you're not, because you're always carrying that group with you that you're rebelling against, whether it's your family or your whatever it might be. So there's something else about being really a true individual where you don't really have to rebel all the time. True individuals is what we really you really want in a spiritual community, in a sangha. But there's a kind of interconnecting link in that spiritual friendship. Because what really keeps a spiritual community vibrant, alive, and spiritual is spiritual friendships. There's always a tendency for even a spiritual community to devolve down to just being a group. You know what a group is. It could be a nation, could be, you know, it's kind of like your team, your school. It's, the world is made up of groups. The spiritual community is quite different, and what really keeps it honest is these spiritual friendships. Okay, so what's a spiritual friendship? Well, there's a really good book on this by Subhuti called Buddhism and Friendship, which really, if you really want to get into it, this is the kind of thing, you know, to read. But I'm just taking one little portion of it where he really is talking much more about. Sorry, I'm trying to find this here. Lost my thing. Maybe I don't need it after all. Okay. It's a very small portion, and he's actually using Aristotle, which might seem a little odd, but. This important thing that Aristotle says about friendship, he says there are three types of friendship. There's the friendship for pleasure, that we just enjoy being with each other, and that's, you know, a good basis for friendship that most of us, you know, really need. Friendship for usefulness, where people are of use to you and you're willing to do something for them. That might be often political alliances, work friendships, and so forth. And there's nothing wrong with those two friendships, and they can be included in this third category that Aristotle says is friendship in the good or for the good. And what you're looking for there in someone is virtue, that is, you're attuned to their good qualities, and you particularly see their good qualities, and this is what you admire them for, and they see that in you as well. And these kinds of friendships tend to endure a little better because it's very easy with the other friendships for them to flip over. If it's friendship for pleasure and your friend changes or doesn't find you as interesting anymore, or you don't find that person that interesting or exciting anymore, then the friendship, you know, sours. Or you could be friends for pleasure and those pleasures might not be so wholesome or virtuous, you know, your drinking buddies, or you might just enjoy being cynical together or what have you. You know, that's a pleasure for you, but it isn't really that strongly ethical. Work friendships or other kinds of friends for use, when the person is no longer of use to you or vice versa, that friendship could fall. But a friend for the good will endure longer because you, first of all, don't expect your friend to stay the same. You expect change. You're not going to be, and in fact, you welcome change and you encourage change, particularly change for the good. So that is somewhat close to, in some ways, to spiritual friendship because you are looking for the goodness in people. And so instead of looking for their weaknesses or whatever, you're looking for their good qualities, and this is what you admire, and it's mutual. They admire you too. So how do you actually do this? I'm thinking of an example, which I'm going to give, which is actually using my brother, which is supposed to be the worst one to pick. Picking a family member is like, you know, there's too much need involved, need love, but you'll see that actually it works fairly well. the two things you have to do, just in terms of practical things, is first you have to be aware of what's holding you back. That was a question Viradama asked last week. What's holding you back? What are the kind of patterns or habits that keep you kind of stuck, that keep you from moving into maybe a better friendship or spiritual friendship? And then once you're kind of aware of that, you see that recurring, then what is it that you can do to, you know, change that? And I'm thinking of sort of like either Buddhist practices that would work, or Buddhist tools. And this is what I find useful, because in a sense, friendship for the good, it really helps if you have the same outlook or practice or deepest values. And that could come from, you know, studying Dharma, you know, so I would look for Buddhist practices or tools. Okay, so here's my brother. He's a few years younger than I, which means we've both been around quite a while. We've had a good friendship. That is that we both were teachers. He still is doing that. We would share that. I used to teach history. He teaches philosophy. But enough, close enough to find each other interesting in that way. We both love traveling. We both like to read. We both, like to go to museums. And we both like, classical music. And so we share a lot. You know, in other words, he's a good friend. But there's also other factors, maybe because he's a brother or whatever, I guess you could call it jealousies, resentments, old comparisons, competition, things that would sort of get in the way. You know, you'd be going along having a great time with each other, and then some small thing would come up, and before you know it, we'd revert to, you know, some really awful, unskilled talk or behavior, and then we'd have to apologize and try and work it out. So we tried to think, you know, and a few years ago, I sent him this book, and now it really helps, too, that he is also practicing Buddhism. I mean, he meditates and learns studying Dharma. So we really have even more in common. That's why it would work really well. So we thought, okay, what are these patterns, these habits, and when do they come up? So when it came up with me was when my brother would travel. This is when I was still working, and I'd be grading papers, and he'd already, semester was over for him, and he'd be off somewhere. Or even now, I don't have the money. I have the time, but not the money. Anyway, he gets to travel more than I do. So there would be this sort of sense of deprivation. You know, why not me? Or resentment, even. And the thing is, he loves to share his trips with me. He wants to email me a lot. He wants to send me pictures. And I don't want to say no, but I was kind of a little bit grudging about it. That was the habit. That was the pattern. And then what did I look for? Well, mudita, which is a Buddhist practice. There's, you know, the metta bhavana, where you develop goodwill, friendliness towards a friend or even a difficult person. And then extension of that is compassion and or rejoicing. This is mudita, rejoicing in someone else's good fortune or someone's happiness. Which would be great, but sometimes someone gets something and you think you should have gotten it, you know. And so I realized that was, so what I should do, what I was given the opportunity to do, was to practice mudita. Let me try it. You know, sort of a Buddhist practice, a Buddhist tool. So when my brother went on a trip, I practiced mudita. I wholeheartedly, you know, rejoiced in his trip. And boy, I sure felt a lot better. And then when he would write to me, I would be happy. I was able to really share that trip in a way with him. And he was happy that he could tell I was much more full-heartedly sharing and not subtly trying to make him feel guilty or anything, you know. And so that really tended to work. So I keep doing it. It does keep working, you know, to really rejoice in someone else's happiness. And you feel a whole lot better, too. And so it just cleared up a lot of that kind of comparison, resentment, whatever was hanging on. Okay, from his point of view, since I said he has more monetary resources than I do, he would be a little bit judgmental about how I spent my money. I guess that was a way of him feeling not bad about having more or something, or lucking out in terms of his job, which was better than mine. So there'd always be this thing where, you know, and yeah, I mean, I could easily be criticized of being foolish in the way I spend my money. You know, I get a small check every month, and by the halfway through the month, I'm already broke. What I call it is my retreat time, where I have to live very simply. It's just because I like to squander it. So anyway, I think there was always that going on. And then I think what he decided to practice, I checked it with him, and he did, was simply dana, generosity, without judging, without expectation, how someone spends their money or expecting a return. And so a few months ago, he asked me, I was about time to buy my, I was going to buy my season ticket to Davies Symphony Hall. It's usually done after I get my tax refund. And he asked me how much it costs. And I thought, oh no, I'm not going to tell him. Because he's going to tell me, oh, do you really need that expensive a seat? Or couldn't you, you know, in other words, I was going to get some advice. And so I didn't want to tell him. And he asked me a few times. I finally thought, okay, I'll tell him. And then I just sort of held my breath expecting the usual. Well, what I got instead was a check in the mail to pay for this. And he was truly practicing dana, you know. So these are just a couple of examples, but they do work, you know. I mean, if you use some of these Buddhist practices, they can really improve a friendship. And especially if you are practicing together, you know, you're studying Dharma or whatever. It's just a wonderful, you know. I mean, I didn't go into studying the Dharma because I wanted a better relationship with my brother, but I almost feel like I'd go on the road and say, hey, you want to improve your friendships or your relationship with, you know, this is the way to do it, because it really does work. And a lot of it is just simply metta, really thinking of someone else, you know, putting yourself in their shoes, you know, really developing that concern for others. And you know, that I think is really the basis in some ways of spiritual friendship.
Thank you, Michelle.